Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. It is Wednesday, so that means it's time to visit with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Today, we have two guests. Up first, Tori Welk, public health nurse, and then joining us a little bit later on will be Dr. Paula Stewart, medical officer of health. We're going to do a COVID update and talk about the local numbers and what's going on as far as vaccinations go. But we start with Tori. Tori, first and foremost, welcome to Lake 88. This is your first visit with us. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you're a public health nurse with the health unit, and you told me off air that you started on the 19th, right? Make that 2019, December, right before the pandemic. What a time to get started.
Yes, was really thrown into it right away.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you're here today to talk to us about National Injury Prevention Day, which was July 5th. And there's a number of things that we wanted to go off. It's a pretty broad topic when you talk about National Injury Prevention Day, because quite honestly, injury prevention can come in so many different ways. So what is included in it?
Yeah, it's definitely a very broad topic. Injuries, there's so many injuries that can occur. One thing we always like to point out is that injuries are not necessarily accidents. They're not usually unexpected, and they occur from typically unknown causes. And the majority of injuries can actually be preventable, and they're most likely predictable.
That makes sense. So what are some of the big areas that injury prevention can make a difference?
Well, since it's summer and it's getting warmer out, and as I'm sure you know, in our region, we have lots of lakes and rivers, lots of bodies of water. I figured today would be best to focus on some water safety, which is a big one. So for water safety, wearing your life jackets, you know, swimming where it is safe to swim, and making sure that you're not driving any boats or vehicles while impaired, that sort of thing.
That makes a lot of sense. And you're right. You've hit the nail right on the head there when it comes to certainly being something around here. We have so many lakes, so many cottagers who come out. There's people who do it on a regular basis, but there's also people who do it on a part-time basis. So, of course, it's good to go over these things, isn't it?
Yes, definitely, for sure.
So what are some of the different ways that you can work to keep your family safe while you enjoy swimming and water play as part of a healthy, active lifestyle?
Yeah, so definitely learning to swim, teaching your kids how to swim, and learning age-specific water safety rules. As a family, this can help everyone gain confidence around the water, and it can keep them safe. In addition, supervision is key. So keeping an eye on your kids and using the buddy system, and that goes for adults too. Because small children can actually drown in as little as 1 inch of water. So it's very important to remain attentive when near any bodies of water.
Yeah, it certainly is. And then when it comes to actually being in the vessels, being in the boats themselves, one of the things that you want to make sure that you do is to wear a proper fitting life jacket, right?
Yes, definitely. Wear a life jacket. And it's important to note that life jackets are not an alternative to supervision. So life jackets and supervision for everyone on board a boat or a Sea-Doo, whatever it is definitely important.
And I, you know, when I talk to the OPP about water safety, they say, you know, we tell people to wear a life jacket. And the key part of that is wearing it. You know, a life jacket isn't going to do you any good if it's tucked under a seat in a boat or something like that, because if your boat gets capsized all of a sudden by a giant wake or whatever, it's not going to pause for you to go and grab that life jacket, is it?
No. And making sure the life jacket is not only like over your shoulders, but it is actually fastened also.
Yeah,
is key.
Exactly. And one of the things I know that I've learned over the years is that if it isn't fastened properly, if it isn't fitted properly, then it can actually become a hazard when someone is thrown into the water.
Yes, because it does not sit where it's properly meant to go, and it can go up around the neck. You definitely want to make sure that the buckles are done, for sure.
When it comes to, you know, first response, when someone has been involved in some sort of water incidents, there's a couple of skills that you should know. One of them is CPR.
Yes, definitely. I believe that if anyone has an opportunity to learn CPR, that is especially useful for not just on the water, but for everyday activities as well, but definitely around water safety, learning water rescue skills as well could be helpful in case of an emergency.
Yeah, definitely. It's another thing that people, when they get their boater's license, they have to learn a little bit about, but it's always good to sort of broaden that knowledge, isn't it?
I think like for the boater's license, it touches it, but only a little bit. It would be good to take a CPR class, first aid, that sort of thing.
Around here and around this time of year, we automatically think about lakes and, rivers and the like when it comes to water safety and active lifestyles and so on. But a lot of people have backyard pools, and there's certain things that you need to be prepared for there as well, right?
Yeah, for backyard pools, have proper fencing and safety equipment for if anything were to happen. In Canada, almost half of all child drownings occur in backyard swimming pools. Specifically for children's age 1 to 4, they're at the highest risk. So, very important to not be distracted around any body of water, not just lakes or rivers, but backyard swimming pools as well.
Yeah, and when it comes to the safety procedures that you put in place when you're, say, closing it for the day or whatever, it's good to have a solid routine that you go through because that repetitive nature will remind you, lock the gate and so on, in case, say, a young child gets away and then says, "Hey, I want to go swimming." Of course, tragedy can unfold.
Yes. Making sure your kids are very water safe is definitely important when you've got a pool in your backyard.
Now, when it comes to injuries and injury prevention, of course, there's no all-encompassing method that's out there to prevent all injuries. They're going to happen along the way, especially when you're talking about kids. So, I don't know. What kind of advice do you have when it comes to, preventing all injuries, even though that may be an impossible question?
It may be impossible. We're not going to, bubble wrap our kids because, of course, like growing up and learning what our bodies can do, we don't want to take the fun out of any physical play. And of course, minor bumps and bruises, they're going to happen. It's, part of life. So the goal is to just be aware of any potential injuries that could occur. And if something were to happen, be prepared.
Excellent. Well, Tori, I want to thank you so much for helping us today understand injury prevention, especially when it comes to water. There was a website that you wanted to let people know about that they could go to if they'd like to get a little bit more information.
Yeah, for any tips and tricks on injury prevention for a wide range of topics, the website is called parachutecanada.org. In addition, you can also visit our website, healthunit.org, and go to our injury prevention topic tab.
Tori Welk, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate this. Your first visit here to In Focus. You did a great job. We look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
And now it is my pleasure to reintroduce Dr. Paula Stewart, our medical officer of health, who is here for a good time, maybe not a long time, because you're a busy person these days, Dr. Stewart. Thank you so much. It's good to see you again. Welcome back to Lake 88.
Thank you. Yes, this is like old home week. This is great. I
Exactly,
miss
right?
you and I miss all the listeners. So yeah, I thought, and you had said I could come back if there was something new or interesting. So I thought now would be a good time.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us what that is? Oh, and I just want to say too that Tori did an excellent job. That was her first time here on Lake 88. She did a great job, and we're really appreciative of that. And just indicative of the broad scope of staff that you have at the health unit. Yeah, for sure.
No, and Tori worked really hard in the COVID response as well. I totally agree with you. So what's interesting is BA5. So, I think at one point you talked me through the Greek alphabet. We're still at Omicron. But it's absolutely fascinating. Omicron continues to have little changes in it, which still make it Omicron, but just there are enough changes in that spike protein that that people who've had an infection before may not develop the same antibodies to the new subvariant as the other one. And so we went through BA1, and then you remember BA2.2, then we went to 2.2.1, 2.1, and then we've now jumped to BA3 didn't do very much, BA4 didn't do very much. BA5 seems to be able to take over. It's like sort of the bully on the block, kind of thing. And so it's rapidly becoming the more dominant one. And it's still Omicron though. So we still have that wide wide range of symptoms from people who have a headache, a fever, a little bit of congestion, and are only sick for a little bit, particularly if they've had the vaccine, all the way to people who can be usually immune compromised, serious underlying health problems, who can end up in hospital and potentially death. So it's still the same Omicron with that widespread of infection. And it's still the same Omicron where you get about a 30 or 40% protection against symptoms. For sure, if you have the vaccine, the three doses of the vaccine at least, then it's the same thing, that the infection is doesn't last as long, the symptoms are lighter, and less virus is expelled so that you don't transmit it as much. So those things are still the same. What changes, fascinating point of view, as a physician, is that if you've already had a COVID infection and it wasn't BA5, then the spike protein on BA5 is just different enough that the body doesn't recognize that you've already had Omicron as B2 or 1.1 or 0.2, 0.12. So you still get symptoms, which is so hard for people to understand. And it's just that the spike protein, which is what the antibodies latch onto to know that I got to get rid of this, is just changed enough that the body doesn't recognize it right away. It does, particularly if you've been vaccinated, it does recognize it with the cellular response, which sends the cells to actually scoop up the virus and take it away. So that's why we're hearing about people say, I had COVID, I had a positive rapid antigen test 2 months ago, and now I've got the same symptoms and I'm positive again. And so that's what it is. So I thought it would be worthwhile to come and share that with people. There's a science behind why people are getting reinfected. And there's a really strong science behind really important to have your vaccine. And the basic vaccine series is the two initially, and then you need the booster. And we've had a tremendous response for the third dose of vaccine among the sort of the 60, 50 plus, but that under 60 age group, there's lots of people who could still get that third dose. So really encouraging people, if you have not had your third dose, to go and get it. We have lots of space available in the clinics, because that's going to help you over the summer, so that you can enjoy being out and about with people, and that'll give you extra protection. And then for sure, for the 60 pluses, if they haven't had their first dose, get it. And the second reason for me being here is that the timing of getting that third or fourth dose will influence when you can get the dose in the fall. And then we can talk about that.
Okay. So a couple of very quick things here. Like when you talk about these slight variants, these are the worries that we had with the, you know, the more dangerous strains early on, that this would happen. They'd mutate and find ways around the defenses and so on. So I guess we're pretty blessed that this is happening with Omicron, because yeah, it isn't as serious as something as, say, Delta, right?
Yeah, you got it. Absolutely right. And so as long as Omicron is able to do little changes, and still hang in being Omicron, it's much better than Delta, much better.
And yeah, when we talk about the doses that people have gotten, there's growing calls for everyone to be allowed in Ontario to get a fourth dose of the vaccine, particularly in the fall, because that's when we're all going to start to go back inside. And obviously we're seeing, yeah, with cases up, I think 30 some odd percent in Ontario overall, that, you know, that's when we're going to need it the most. What are your, yeah, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I entirely agree. And NACI has just, the second reason for coming is that NACI has just come out with their recommendations for the fall booster. NACI is National Advisory Committee on Immunization, and they're going to be highly recommending it for everyone 65 and older. We know that because that's the group that, and in our population, just like in Ontario and Canada, ends up in hospital if you have chronic conditions. So really highly recommending a booster dose in the fall for the 65 plus, and still recommending it for all of the 12 plus. It'll be interesting to see what they decide about the 5 to 11, because right now we're still resting with the two doses. They seem to have a bit of a better immune response, which is really cool. Yeah. And then we're still waiting on the under five. So I think, yes, for sure. I think that we talked before about how we were planning for it, and NACI coming out recommendation really helps us. Yes, I think we're going to be doing a fall campaign. The question is, with which vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so NACI gives us probably really good encouragement that the vaccine that Pfizer and Moderna are developing, and probably others are as well, will continue to have the original COVID virus spike protein. So it'll still have that. The body will make that spike protein so that the body knows that and will say, oh, I've seen this before, I don't like it, and increase the immune response. And they're hoping to add one from Omicron. I don't know which of the, it'll probably be what is the generic sort of spike protein, which would be great, because then instead of preventing symptoms of 30 to 40%, we could bump it up. Like, you know, sky's the limit, right?
Yeah.
If we have Omicron, if we have an Omicron spike protein in the vaccine as well. And so the big question is, when will it be ready? And when will we have enough of it that we can actually roll out a campaign? So I think fall, for exactly the reasons you said, is what we want to be going for, because that's when all respiratory viruses appear. We're inside, our mucous membranes are drier, the air is drier, the viruses hang in the air a little bit longer, like all those kinds of things. One thing that's really important for people to pay attention to is now the timing of your third or fourth dose now. If you haven't had your third dose, you should get it within the next couple of weeks, because the interval between the third or your fourth dose and the fall booster has to be at least 3 months, preferably 5. The longer you wait between getting a boost means that the body gets a bigger boost, because the antibody levels have fallen off. And when they're low, the body says, and gives a big boost to it. So it's, you can imagine if you have your third vaccine or your fourth vaccine today, then beginning of August is 1 month, September to October is 3, November is 4, and December is 5. So you're right in that good window to be able to get your vaccine, hopefully an even better one, that will then hold you for at least the 6 months over the winter. So that was the second reason to be here. If you haven't had your third, please get your third. It really makes a big difference. And this is a time when you need it, because people are out and about, and you want to be protected, and you want to protect others. Same thing with fourth. There you go.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I really appreciate that. I know it was a quick visit today, but definitely some important information that got out there. And also, we know you're ready to roll whenever it happens. The health unit has done such a great job, and Tori's still here with us. She's nodding her head as well. So it's not only, you know, the medical officer of health, and you're still the medical officer of health, by the way.
Yeah, I am a little bit longer.
Yeah, a little bit longer. But everybody involved, public health nurses and so on, you guys are ready to mobilize when you do get the call. So that should be very comforting for listeners to Lake 88. As always, Dr. Stewart, it's a pleasure to have you here. We appreciate, I know you're very busy today, so we appreciate you giving us some time. And I look forward to our next conversation. And Tori, again, thank you so much for being here as well. It's always a pleasure to have this partnership with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit to get this information out there. Thank you to you both.
Oh, you're welcome. And everybody, enjoy the summer. Winter will be here soon enough.
Well, I'm going to have you on before the summer's over again. Sounds so you can good. Tell us about your horseback riding and all the good things that you're doing.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, bye-bye.
Excellent. Okay, take care. Our guest today on In Focus, the Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit, Dr. Paula Stewart, and Public Health Nurse Tori Welk. I'm Bob Perreault. Have a wonderful afternoon.